Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a conversation about Judaism, anti-Semitism, Zionism, and the conflicts on college campuses with Emmanuel Acho and Noah Tishby, authors of the new book, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Jew. But we begin at the Milken Conference in Beverly Hills, one of the biggest gatherings of the year in California, the biggest gathering of capital in terms of people who control money of any event in the world. It is extraordinary, all the people that are there over 4 days at the Beverly Hilton, convened by Michael Milken. And here is our story, taking you behind the scenes with a variety of big, big name voices.
You're probably like me. You keep wondering when we get to quit. And the answer is never.
Former President Bill Clinton interviewed by Michael Milken. It's the 27th year Milken has convened many of the world's top minds in California at the Milken Institute's global conference.
You have to be excited about the future.
Milken compares Elon Musk to Spock from Star Trek.
Space, the final frontier.
Musk's efforts to make humans a multi-planetary species.
I've not seen any evidence of aliens, and SpaceX with the Starlink constellation has roughly 6,000 satellites, and not once have we had to maneuver around a UFO.
Musk's interview, one of the 170 sessions at Milken. There are 1,000 speakers and 4,000 attendees.
Our theme this year is called Shaping a Shared Future.
Conrad Kieschel is the executive director of global programming and events for the California-based Milken Institute.
We're still Californians in our hearts and our approach in terms of the openness to innovation and thinking outside the box.
Is there an issue you think that's especially interesting this year?
Absolutely. It's artificial intelligence.
Usher asked about AI by moderator Lisa Ling.
I'm the only me that I can be.
You have no idea what it's like for Usher to be looking me in the eyes going, I'm the only one of me.
Puck's Matthew Bellany talking AI with Hollywood heavyweights.
On a path to be the most powerful tool for creators ever.
It's actually a really exciting time for Hollywood because nobody knows where it's going to be in 5 years.
Actress Kerry Washington says the new tech can empower artists and more diverse storytelling.
And I will partner with you, but I will not be your pawn.
A similar dynamic in sports.
It sounded like a shotgun!
Where unprecedented athlete salaries and control over their own social media messaging is creating huge financial opportunities.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
12-time NBA All-Star Chris Paul had to learn how to cash in.
As a 19-year-old kid, I get drafted to the NBA and I fall into all of this money. I have no financial literacy or anything like that.
Paul, David Beckham, Candace Parker, and Magic Johnson, all building brands beyond sports.
When did that switch go off?
Well, let's first start with this. I had to kick ass on that court first.
You're going to have some divided government consensus on this.
There's also a wide variety of political views.
Our colleagues in the Democrat side left us.
Including senators from both sides of the aisle.
When we don't legislate, we just fight.
We catch up with former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
I think Trump's going to play this like Apprentice.
He discusses Donald Trump's search for a vice president.
Look, I think Tim Scott would be the ideal, having served in the House, having served in the Senate.
If Trump wins and Scott, currently the senator from South Carolina, becomes VP, could McCarthy become Trump's White House Chief of Staff?
Are you the ideal Chief of Staff?
Look, Trump's his own chief of staff.
Longtime pollster Frank Luntz brought students from Rwanda to Milken to learn American politics firsthand. Those students surprised at our dysfunction.
But it does seem very confusing to us, the rest of the world.
That this is even happening?
Yeah. So I never expected to see this.
Luntz introducing them to prominent leaders, including Bill Clinton.
I want them to see that Africa is important to the people in this room.
What's been the biggest lesson you've learned?
I mean, resilience and how important partnerships are.
When all these folks leave California, what do you want their takeaway from the Golden State to be?
I want them to be inspired and to see us as partners and innovators.
California's first partner, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, is here.
It's because it is about partnership between the public and private sector. So
she wants tech companies to prioritize young users' mental health.
It's being very clear on what age-appropriate design an algorithmic design that doesn't lead to further harm or causing children to go down paths that lead to more self-harm. Student planted, student grown.
While in town, she invites another Milken speaker, U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, to tour a school in Glissell Park.
Oh, look!
It's part of her farm-to-school initiative she hopes will become a national model.
All of this is about our kids' nutrition, which again is about their mental health, their physical health.
L.A. Mayor Karen Bass on hand to welcome the world to Southern California.
Getting them interested and excited about all that we have to offer.
They're here less than a week after these images of violence at UCLA allowed to continue for hours without police intervention at a Middle East protest.
I was absolutely shocked and horrified at the violence that I saw. And I do hope that there will be a complete, comprehensive investigation, and people need to be held accountable.
UCLA is under the jurisdiction of UC Police, not the LAPD, meaning Bass has little actual authority over any of this.
Why, frankly, was the counter-protest happening right next door to the encampment on a big university that counter-protest could have happened in a lot of places?
Also here, Bass's predecessor as LA mayor, Eric Garcetti, now serving as the U.S. ambassador to India.
I hope that people from LA will come to India.
This is his first interview back in L.A. while in that job.
It's one of the best jobs in the world right now to see this intersection of the two biggest democracies in the world.
The global conference drawing the president of Argentina and the queen of Jordan.
But your bottom line is we got to think bigger than a global conference, right?
That's right. We have to think, well, it's a global endeavor to move humans off this planet.
Steve Altemus is president and CEO of Intuitive Machines. Last year, they landed a capsule on the moon.
This lunar economy is a real economy.
Politico's Melanie Mason says this conference has a California vibe.
There's just a little bit more of the sun is shining, we can let our hair down a little bit more.
There's a puppy petting station to relieve stress, which we both enjoy. On the same week, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem defended her decision to shoot and kill her puppy.
No Kristi Noem sighting there.
Absolutely, yeah, she is not allowed.
Almost everybody loves puppies. Thanks to everybody at the Milken Institute. By the way, what's really cool about what they do, everything that they do is posted live in real time, streaming for free, and is posted on their website afterwards. So if you want to watch any of those sessions, you can go to milkeninstitute.org and watch them whenever you want to for free on demand. Up next, a conversation about Judaism and why all the hatred. Here are Emmanuel Acho and Noah Tishby.
As tensions mount on college campuses and anti-Semitism increases around the world, we want to take a moment to explore where that comes from and what can be done to fight hate. Our next guests are combining their talents to do just that. Emmanuel Acho and Noah Tishby are co-authors of Uncomfortable Conversations with a Jew, out now. Emmanuel is an analyst and host for Fox Sports, a former NFL linebacker, and host of the Uncomfortable Conversations series on YouTube. His previous book, Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man, was a New York Times bestseller. Noah Tishby is Israel's former special envoy for combating anti-Semitism and delegitimization. She's the producer behind In Treatment on HBO. And her previous book, Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. Emmanuel, Noah, welcome. Thanks so much for being here. I know, Emmanuel, you were joined us virtually for Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man, which is one of our favorite shows we'd ever done. We aired it multiple times because we loved it so much. So it's great to have you both here and to have this important, uncomfortable conversation right now. And Noah, Emmanuel deserves credit because he was way ahead of everybody on this. This was not an October 7th, let's talk about this issue. He called you like over a year before that.
Emmanuel deserves literally all the credit for the existence of this book. The entire thing was his idea, his actions, his initiative. Emmanuel called me about 2 years ago, so about a year and a half before October 7th happened, before anything that's happening on college campuses, before this cultural moment. And he noticed the rise in anti-Semitism and that was something that the Jewish community noticed. We all knew something is brewing. And a lot of people from the outside of the Jewish community, from outside the Jewish community, would say stuff like, oh, well, Kanye West is just crazy. And Louis Farrakhan is like, he's extreme. And Kyrie Irving, he's, you know, whatever. Nobody, all these things. And Emmanuel was like, wait a second. There's something that's happening in the culture, and I need to understand what it is, and I want to educate myself, and I want to learn, and I want to help. And he called me and asked me if I wanted to do this book with him, and I couldn't have said yes faster.
Right. And what were you seeing that other people weren't seeing?
Well, one, I think I'm a curious person, and we don't have to live in ignorance. Like, that's a choice that we can have. And so I saw people making statements that were naturally anti-Semitic intentionally, and making statements that were incidentally anti-Semitic because they had no idea that what they were saying.
Right.
So instead of just navigating my life ignorantly, I said, wait a second, let me ask these questions, not just in a safe space, but in a real space. Let me talk about and ask about Jewish people in power, Jewish people in money. Let me ask, hey, are Jewish people white? Let me ask you and press, am I anti-Semitic just because I don't agree with Jewish people? Like, let's really go there. Some of the chapter titles, so are Jews white? Why did the Jews kill Jesus? Let's talk about Jewish.
Did the Jews kill Jesus? Because we agree that they didn't. Or maybe they did, and if they didn't, it doesn't matter.
But even the reason I say it in that manner is because there's the perception that the Jews killed Jesus. And based upon theology and all these things, let's unpack all of it. So, like, let's really go there.
And everywhere.
Right.
Which was really fun, and there's nothing that he could have said in that process that it would have been offensive to me. Nothing.
What is anti-Semitism?
Ah, I love this question. All right, so anti-Semitism, first of all, it's one word. It's not anti-Semitism. It's not two words. It's not hyphenated. It's not capitalized. It's like a word, any other word. So anti-Semitism is specifically for its Jewish hatred. It's like anti-Jewish racism. However, it's not as simple as racism. Because if you're racist against somebody, then you look down at them. Then you say to yourself, I'm much better than them. It's kind of like the Nazis were saying, oh, the Jews are the vermin of the earth. They're horrible, they're terrible. We're much better than them, right? Anti-Semitism is a little bit more complicated because it is a shape-shifting conspiracy theory. So it's a shape-shifting conspiracy theory such that it changes every couple of years, right? The goalpost moves, and every couple of years it looks a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. So it attributes to the Jews, not just like we're so much better than them, right? But also mythological powers, like this cabal insinuating that the Jews have some sort of a controlling hand, and there's like, it's a fifth column, and they mm-hmm. have the plan to control the world. That is anti-Semitism. It's specifically for the Jews, and it's a shape-shifting conspiracy theory.
And you all sort of disagree over the definition of Zionism a little bit, right? I mean, there's a moment in the book where you kind of have to stop talking to each other after October 7th.
Yeah, it's not over Zionism. It's over something else.
How do you define Zionism?
Well, I think the definition, especially as I listen to know, it's Jewish people's right to self-govern, self-determine, Israel's right to have a state. Jewish people's right to have a state. And I think that is where, in the book, it wasn't a disagreement over the definition. It was more so like I don't like war, and I don't like what it takes for countries to exist. Now, mind you, every country has had to go through that process mm-hmm. of existence. And so, obviously, I believe in Jewish people's right to have a state. But with Noah, the tension and the friction came, I was like, but wait, Noah, what about war? What about this? What about blood? What about this? What about displacement? So many things that my small mind, if you will, has a hard time wrestling with and grasping. But chapter 16, how the book almost didn't happen, that was when the book completely fell apart. Noah and I stopped talking for 3 weeks because we had such a sharp disagreement on a matter. It wasn't Zionism,
right.
but on a matter.
It was over this idea of you talking to somebody who she interpreted as pro-Hamas, right, and who you should be talking to.
But
we don't need to bring it up all again. But that's where some of that came from. And so for you, but you think that on this Zionism issue, and we look at these college campus protests, and you hear people, I'm not against Jews, I'm not anti-Semitic, I'm anti-Zionist, right? And they say that what's happening with the Israeli government is wrong. What do you say to that?
First of all, does any of them know what the definition of Zionism is? And I would venture to say that they don't. The definition of Zionism is very simple. In simple words, as Emmanuel said, it's Israel's right to exist, Jewish people's right to have a state. That's that's the most simple. In a little bit more, like a little bit more nuanced way, it's the Jewish people's right for self-governance and self-determinations in some parts of their ancestral land in a Jewish, not an exclusively Jewish state. And that is the thing that they don't understand. They think Zionism means racism. They think that Zionism means imperialism. It doesn't mean any of these things. And here's the thing. The majority of Jews around the world are Zionists. Mm-hmm. The vast majority.
You say like 99%.
Like 95 to 98%.
Yeah.
Vast majority. You can find some Jews that say I'm anti-Zionist, that say that Israel should not exist. It's a very small percentage. Now, anti-Zionism doesn't mean that you can't be critical of the Israeli government. That is totally fine. If you say that I don't like the Israeli government, that is totally, there's nothing Zionist, there's nothing anti-Semitic about that. But if you deny the Jewish people's right to exist, and you only deny one people's right to exist, there's a name for that.
You know, Emmanuel, it's really interesting because you look at the history between our people, and I'm a Jew, and I use the word Jew, which we've talked about, but that you look back in the 60s, and when Martin Luther King Jr. came to Southern California, he was embraced in a big way by the Jewish community. Here is a picture of him at Temple Israel in Southern California. He spoke at several different Jewish places of worship. We know many of the Freedom Riders who went down and were beaten up and were crusading for civil rights were Jews, many of them Jews from Southern California. And yet we see there is tension right now between blacks and Jews. What happened there?
In my opinion, I think a few things. I think number one, in America, we simplify so many things into black and white. And that's wrong. We're simplifying it to the lowest common denominator of black and white. And there is no greater polarization, particularly being videographed, social media, between the black and white community than right now. And if we couple the Jewish community as the white community, because non-Jewish people, for the most part, interpret Jewish people as being white, and there's tension between the black community and the white community, there has to be tension between the black community and the Jewish community because Jewish people are white, which is why, quite literally, we penned a chapter.
Right.
So, are Jewish people white?
And the answer is
yes. And the answer is to
none. No.
But that's the answer.
Jew. That's why everybody needs
to Jews,
read.
Because Jews are more than just a religion, it's also seen as a race by a lot of people. When you go on 23andMe, I did the test and it told me I was 99% Ashkenazi Jew.
Right.
And I was like, I needed a DNA test to tell me that. It's not going to tell you you're Catholic.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's the difference.
Right. So, but that is true, by the way, for some Ashkenazi Jews that actually can trace down to this little village of 300 families, which is really interesting. Yeah. But Judaism, being Jewish, it's not just a religion, it's an ethno-religion, it's a tribe. Literally, it's its own thing. So it's its own ethnicity. So when Emmanuel and I were talking about it, I was like, yes, I understand. I'm white passing. I look like a white person. But I'm not as privileged. I'm privileged today in the world, in America today. But like the privilege that the Jewish community has also includes having my entire extended family perish in the Holocaust and not being allowed to own land, not being allowed to hold certain jobs. Like, we have a history that once you put it, to Emmanuel's point, once you put our history through the prism of color, black or white, through the prism of oppressor and oppressed, through the prism of melanin in the skin, the Jewish community just doesn't fit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just doesn't fit.
This conversation is so heavy, and I know you've been having it over and over again, which is heavy, but just on a fun note. From a cultural perspective, what have you learned about Jews culturally that surprised you?
Man, surprise, I won't use the word surprise, but I think the biggest thing I've learned is the generational trauma and how it impacts the present perspective. And we all have different generational traumas. If you don't understand someone's trauma, you don't understand how to best navigate around that. And when I was talking about Jewish people in power, Alex, you and I have had the conversation privately, I'll have it now with the audience publicly. I said, wait a second, the owner of the team that drafted me in 2012 to the National Football League, the Cleveland Browns, he was a Jewish man. Then I was traded to the Philadelphia Eagles in 2013. He was a Jewish man. I left the NFL in 2016. My first agent on television was a Jewish woman. So how is it offensive when I say that Jewish people are in power? But in talking to Noah and having an uncomfortable conversation, she reminded me so often people would use the concept of Jewish power to say we need to get the Jews out of power, thus the Holocaust, along with pogroms, along with so many other things that have been a detriment to the Jewish people. So learning about the trauma historically helps me better understand how to navigate conversations to better live life and live in this world with people that don't live.
And what's been your biggest surprise about black culture?
First of all, that's such a beautiful thing to say. This is so moving for me personally, I'm sure for a lot of our viewers, to have somebody from outside of our community who has no stakes in the game to insert yourself that way and learn so much. The way he's describing it is just, it's very moving. I think it was very similar. We have a story there that we're not gonna get into in which I had a faux pas. I said something that I shouldn't have said, mm-hmm. and I didn't know the history of that at all, and I was mortified. So I was able to, through that conversation of the white and the black communities in America, I was able to see also the animosity of the black community for the Jewish community that are white passing, mm-hmm. that we have the ability to hide our Jewishness and to benefit from the privileges of white Americans, which the black community just doesn't have. So I always say that being Jewish in America these days is like, don't ask, don't tell. Like, mm-hmm. as long as you're not hot, you're not saying that you're Jewish, you're fine. And right. to Emmanuel's point, the black community can't do that.
You're right.
So
there's rooms I can walk into where people don't know I'm Jewish, but there's no Correct. Room you can exactly. walk into where people don't know you're
exactly.
black.
Well said. And
unless
how important
they're
is
blind,
that to have
course.
This conversation
yeah, it's so
in
important.
America today?
And so we end with something fun. This is our personal issues game. This is where we'll see if you have any cultural similarities. Okay, this is 30 seconds on the clock.
God.
First thing that comes to
oh,
mind,
no.
go fast, okay?
Okay.
What is your favorite meal?
Oh, my God. Chocolate, any kind of chocolate.
Favorite meal?
Lasagna.
Okay, Ooh. Who's your favorite musical artist?
Kirk Franklin.
God, I can't think. I would say classic Madonna and also Gidi Gov. There's an Israeli artist who's old school.
Favorite TV show? You may be biased
Ever?
There.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's Friends. I'm sorry. okay. I know. Yeah. I can't.
I'm going to say Breaking Bad.
Oh, great. Ooh. Great show.
Much better.
Favorite athlete?
Steph Curry.
This is weird. Agnes Kelly.
Oh my God.
Ah,
oh, I thought you were
going to
say Emmanuel Acha. Come on.
He's my favorite person.
Yeah, and last question, favorite thing about each other.
Oh man, God.
Noah's boldness, her boldness. It's impeccable.
Oh, you're awesome.
What do you think?
Everything. Like, literally, what is not to love? Like, the entire thing. Your curiosity and your ability to be kind of like a mercurial in a good way, to listen, move back, move forward, move back, and your emotional intelligence.
Well, we end
Nobody's ever asked us that.
I love it. Our thanks to Emmanuel and to Noah and to you for listening. Next week on The Issue Is, Jen Psaki, the former White House press secretary and MSNBC host and author of a new book, will be in our studio. We're really excited about talking to her. And also excited that we got 5 nominations this week from the LA Press Club. Thank you to them for honoring our show on our 6th anniversary week. So happy anniversary to us. It's been 6 years since our first show with then Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. Whatever happened to that guy? Thanks again for listening. I'm Alex Michelson. Hope you can like and subscribe. Let us know what you think of the show. Hope you'll interact with me in social media. Until next week, thanks for watching and listening to The Issue Is.